Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 29 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. There you'll also be able to purchase your tickets for our November 24th Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. That's November the 24th. Tickets are just $30. You can buy them online at farmassetsconference.com or dial 800-898-1065.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Aaron Curtis, I'd like to start with you and your list of items to discuss this week.
Well, I guess fresh on our mind, of course, is probably when the farmer starts to let go of some of this stuff here moving forward. Obviously, been pretty quiet now that harvest is kind of wrapped up in those areas, at least from here east. And probably another thing that we're interested too is where do we think this corn export program goes as we head through the winter, Todd?
Bill Gentry?
I think basis levels in different areas of the Midwest are pretty important at this particular point. And I think some of the Chinese factors, the DDG issues, that they might be slowing down on that and the impact it might have on our domestic meal.
And Scott Harms?
Well, one thing we're watching is, you know, we think corn and beans have decent value down here, but we're waiting, like everyone else, for that feature that's going to take us to the upper end of value and perhaps break us out of this recent channel we've been in. And I guess also looking at the increase in ethanol exports to China over the last couple months, is that something that could be a trend longer term and be a supportive feature for grains going forward, or is that somewhat more of a temporary feature?
And Bill Mayer, did they leave anything for you? Maybe crop insurance setting month.
Yeah, we're getting the average price of spread here finished up, but I guess we've talked about ethanol and exports. Let's talk about feed too while we're talking about demand, and just maybe in general, how does the guy look at approaching the next 90 days here from a marketing standpoint?
Okay, Bill, so let's start there with that on feed demand. What do you see in feed demand domestically from the livestock sector?
Well, I think that you see cattle still struggling. We had decreases in the poultry side, both egg sets and the broiler set or broiler placements this week for the first time in a while, I believe. And the hogs really are in pretty good shape. The margins there look like they're pretty decent right now, and you continue to see hog production go. So from the, it's kind of a mixed bag, I guess, from the demand side. And I think the USDA probably has their number in there at a pretty good level. I think right around 5.275 or something like that is what they have on the last report. The question may be, are the cattle numbers and the lack of profitability there, is that going to maybe bring that number down as we move forward? I don't think so, but I guess I'd be open to hearing discussion on that.
Anybody else have ideas? I think they've been feeding cattle to awfully heavy weights. I would think that would take a lot more corn to do. Bill Gentry, have you been watching it?
Yeah, I have. And I think realistically, those heavier weights, most of them have been worked through. I think what it really does is probably with the numbers that we're seeing, caps the upside potential. But we do have some value in these current levels, and we've been watching the cash for somewhat of a recovery. The other thing in the livestock sector that I was just got a new read on recently was China's going to resume importation of hogs, and they've approved several different locations to receive from. So if we do have some issues there, they might be able to pick up some of the extra production slack from this overproduction.
So when we're talking about this, if we're talking about the livestock sector, we haven't done this for a while, really concentrated on
the feed side of the corn market in particular, mostly because it's been driven for several years by ethanol. That naturally is flat at this time. It is 2015, and we have reached the top of the RFS, although in November we might find some new things out from the federal government. We'll see whether that actually has an impact or not, or if ethanol is just built into the marketplace in a tough enough way that we won't go below what the demand level has been built for at this point. We're back to that feed side of the business. Do you think, Bill, because you mentioned moving red meat, pork in particular, out of the country, that we'll have to begin to export our grains and oil seeds again through red meat? And is that really possible very much?
I think you could probably move the needle a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a tremendous amount. It's kind of like walking your green to market. It can be done in certain areas, possibly, but I don't think it's going to be a real game changer.
Yeah, I don't know that I would agree with what Bill said there on the export side of it. I think it's going to be tough, especially with the currency situation. The other thing, though, I think that's interesting is that we do have these lower energy prices, and we should see people with a little bit more disposable income, and will that increase maybe the meat consumption just on the domestic side? I think that's a positive that I see out there that we don't get a lot of talk about yet, and there's nothing really showing that that's occurring at this point, but you know, it may be something to watch in the future here.
Yeah, I said that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that in that direction, because I've been, as far as a lot of the demand, I've been watching the economy and seeing what kind of disposable income shifts we really do see, but I think that is a very valid point that should be considered.
Scott Harms from Archer Financial Services, you mentioned China. We've been watching that. You've also mentioned that we're looking for some kind of feature to break us out. Before you get to that, you said that we were at good values for corn and soybeans at these levels. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Well, I think the market is fairly priced for both corn and soybeans, probably in the bottom end of that recent value of that value range. It's probably a market that's not going anywhere real fast, but just to tack onto the whole feed discussion, and that's an area that we're watching real closely, and it certainly could be the biggest wild card as we move forward. You know, we've got the crop in the bin. We largely know what the yield is. You know, it will change slightly in November and January, but I don't think anyone really expects a major change, major shift. So then we look to what can be the next thing that can break us out. And fundamentally, it probably is going to fall on feed demand for perhaps first half usage. We get in the January stocks numbers and we find that first half usage on the feed side was higher than expected. And then we get a drawdown in stocks. If we can draw down the stocks by the time we get to the January report, carryover projection down, you know, below 1.5 billion bushel, 1.23 to 4, then perhaps you can get a little more excited about prices. And the other feature that could drive us back to the upside could be some kind of technical demand. A year ago, we didn't think that we could rally corn prices in the face of a record harvest. We were able to do that because the funds got participatory on the long side. They're largely flat if you look at all grain commodities. So if they were going to step in, I guess we believe that they would favor the long side of the market. So I think we're at the bottom end of value. Now we just need a reason or a feature to take us to the top end of value.
Aaron Curtis, can you come up with a good reason to take us to the top end?
Well, I think I kind of agree with Scott there. I think we're going to kind of continue to tread water. I think we've had multiple opportunities here over the last few weeks here for push corn lower, and we just can't get it done. We continue to see funds try to continue to hang in there on the long side, continue to kind of defend their position again. You know, when we get down to this 370, 375 area time and time again over the last few weeks. So I think, unfortunately, on the demand side, you know, the export program continues to be a little bit lackluster. That continues to kind of keep a lid on things. We don't want to get too expensive here moving forward. But overall, you know, if we're going to continue to be, you know, somewhat demand-led, we know that historically is a slow grinder without any sort of production issues in South America or, you know, Black Sea region at this point. You know, any kind of advance is going to be slow going. So, you know, I kind of think we're going to continue to kind of grind sideways here until the first of the year, and then, you know, hopefully look for some of those demand stories to kind of get us back up to the top end of the recent range and hopefully break out of that here on the upside moving into the spring.
When do you expect producers to open the bin doors up the next time around?
I think it's going to be a while. I think for those areas that have finished up with harvest, those storage decisions have been made, and we know at least the last couple of years that once that grain gets put into storage, it's a hard press to get it out. I think $4 cash is still a target at this point for a lot of producers. You look at that's quite a ways away as far as a futures rally at this point. So it's going to take a pretty good effort to try to get the future markets up to that point where the producer gets interested. I think they're going to continue to kind of be bored to death here with the market the way that it looks if we continue to stay range bound. And I think it's going to be a while. I think we'll see, you know, the traditional some stuff move here at the end of the year for tax reasons for some individuals. Maybe some stuff move in January, but you know, if it's anything like last year, I think the farmer is going to be pretty patient here moving forward. The exception this year, Todd, is probably that they're a lot more patient on selling beans than they were last couple of years. They've been a little more aggressive seller on beans, a holder of corn. This year, for the most part, they've been a pretty tight holder of both commodities.
Does everybody think that that is actually the case as we came through harvest? I had the feeling that many of you were of a mind that producers actually were running beans across the scale and a lot of them and not holding on to them.
Well, I think that's what the market was driving to with the lack of carry between the NOM and the Jan contracts. They were encouraging farmers to sell them off the combine and store corn. And I think to a large degree, the farmers answered what the market was telling them to do. And, yeah, I would agree with that.
I saw that too, Todd. I think we saw a higher percentage of the beans sold, at least for the people that I deal with. And part of that was just due to looking at yields, good yields coming in and, you know, dollars per acre. Commercially, you know, beans delivered to the commercial elevator, it seemed like to me, were sold pretty heavily, but Aaron may have a better handle on that because he deals directly with the elevators.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that there might be a difference between your clientele and Aaron, what you're dealing with in the elevator, and obviously the elevator didn't take in as many sales. Did you take in as many receipts?
Yeah, bean receipts are really good. I mean, bean sales bean yields, obviously, from what everybody has probably heard, right? Bean yields were very good. Really even capitalized some corn space in a large percent of the elevators, at least in Illinois, due to the fact that, you know, we heard a lot of bean yield 70-plus, and that really surprised probably the producer, but also the elevator manager, too, as well, as those beans were, you know, pretty good, especially considering in some areas, you know, we had somewhat of a dry August, so it kind of went against contrary opinions as far as what bean yields normally do. The exception, of course, was the corn variability, and there was some space, obviously, to be had, unfortunately, on the corn side, just due to some of those areas had a lot of variability. So for the most part, you know, beans got put away okay just because of some of that corn space being used. But, you know, if we just look at our volume that we've seen, at least on the hedge volume over the, you know, over the fall period, it was, you know, considerably less than what we've seen in previous years as far as the farmer selling beans. And I would argue that the NOV-Jan bean spread inverting to 4 cents there on Monday argues that the producer was not a large seller of grain.
So does this mean, Bill Gentry, that come January there will be a lot of hedge pressure in the marketplace based on beans that will be sold?
I couldn't think that's indeed possible. One of the things I was going through my thought process was the bean market profile is appreciably different. You know, we've seen a good crop come in. We see two crops, North and South America, opposite in the marketing year. What I think realistically is they're already telegraphing to us that they're going to have this really big, tremendous crop. And the producers are looking and say, if I'm going to put one in the bin, what's going to be worth more to me later? And beans just don't seem to have that feature. We sat through a meeting today trying to discuss what would get the markets ignited, and really the only one of consequence would be South American weather to really cause some grief. Most of the other things are a lot smaller on the scale as far as market movers. And I think the basis levels and the profile of the market not showing carry really says if you need money and you want to move something, beans are the choice.
based on its history. South American weather is very stable, although they did have a bad year recently. But their weather, if you listen to the meteorologist, because they're in they're monsoonal and dry, meaning in the wintertime they get almost nothing, and then during the spring, summer, they get a lot of rain, and that just happens. It would be very difficult, I would think, Bill Gentry, for the Brazilians in particular to have a tough growing season this year. So now that brings us to the idea of what should farmers do, and maybe we can go around the horn with you and start, Bill Gentry, with you.
Sure. What we really are putting on the table right now, especially for the guys that have been aggressively sold, probably looking at some re-ownership strategies. We talked about it earlier in the discussion that the downside seems somewhat limited, but the upside's not open enough yet. But I think we could explore some 925 test, maybe 950 bean prices, and see some $4 plus corn prices. Don't know when it would really take place, but we see that as being something sooner or down the road rather than lower prices. So, and also the basis in the corn, in particular, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt, is telegraphing to us that there's going to be some short supplies and there's going to be some values. And I think sitting on the corn, the cash corn, is a good idea. But guys that have already made sales or want to protect insurance could probably come back in and do some re-ownership.
Scott Harms?
Yeah, we're not advocating doing a heck of a lot at these price levels, again, because we think we're at the lower end of value. We want to be patient. We want to wait for that rally in which to reward. If somebody wanted to be proactive and do a re-ownership strategy re-own some bushels they sold previously, this would be a decent time to do that. Ideally, we'd like to wait until December to do re-ownership strategy if we can buy ourselves that time, because we'd like to buy options further out into the May contract, because it may be March by the time we start to see the market possibly find a reason to rally sharply, if there is going to be a sharp rally. You know, we look at the cash sales, producer sales, and the corn in the bin not necessarily being a negative feature, but it's just going to cap the rally. So if you're going to buy options, it doesn't pay when you're going to have somewhat of a minimal move. So we want to buy ourselves some time. So we're not doing a lot here, but, you know, I think we've all been in this place before where we sit around and we think there's nothing that can drive the prices higher. We don't know what that feature is. That fundamental feature doesn't seem prevalent to us now, but something could pop up. So people really need to have the orders in, either at the elevator. You don't want to be the last one to sell it, because just as low prices take care of low prices, high prices will slow down demand, and we will open up the bin doors if we sharply get a sharp rally. So you got to be ready and have your orders in place to take advantage of it. But right now, we're just going to be patient.
And Bill Mayer.
Yeah, I guess I'm still a little bit surprised at Aaron's observations, because we were pretty aggressive on the bean selling as we went through harvest, and we're just kind of at this point in time looking for maybe some lower markets to look at some re-ownership, as Scott was talking about, through call options or something like that, if we see some lower bean prices. On the corn side of it, I guess I think that I totally agree with what Scott said there. You have to be ready. You have to have your orders in there. Look at the numbers that you are willing to either price your basis contract, because I know there were quite a few basis contracts on corn taken at harvest time, or just make additional new sales and have those sequential offers in with the elevator, I think, and, you know, in a 10 or 15 cent increment, however you want to do it. I think the thing that we're trying to stress to our clients is that I believe the opportunities will be there this year, but they'll be fewer and shorter in duration. So you need to be ready to act and have the plan ready to be executed prior to the opportunity occurring.
So, Aaron, what I think I've heard are a couple who've said be ready and on the short-term rallies, and at least one who's willing to wait. Where do you stand?
I'm somewhat patient, too. I think corn still has got some opportunity to gain in value here, especially more than soybeans. I guess it's hard to be, you know, too friendly soybeans here moving forward, just based on strict fundamentals, based on the, you know, balance sheet here domestically, and also what is the potential in South America. I don't think we fall asleep quite yet on Brazilian weather. Obviously warm and dry up to this recent rain that's predicted here over the next few days. I think November looks a little warmer and drier again, so I keep an eye on that. But you know, every time we go up and hit kind of that $9 area, at least recently on the November beans, we kind of run out of steam. That translates about the same area in the Jan right now with that spread close to even money. So I kind of watch that area, continue to kind of watch that area here if you got some beans to sell. But longer term, especially in probably into the spring, late winter time, I think we'll see some higher corn prices here moving forward.
Bill, you mentioned DDG's Gentry in China. They did make an announcement this week that they're going to, and it's not clear exactly what they're going to do, whether they're suspending or just...
I just was reading the headline. Chinese customers have temporarily stopped buying distillers dried grains DDGs from the United States amid worries that Beijing may launch a new anti-dumping probe into imports of feed ingredients, industry sources said. And that's off of one of the blogs, Icon blog. So I think it's still an emerging issue. I think it's got a couple of different caveats to it because, you know, that's going to come back and maybe put a little pressure on our domestic meal market. But I also think it tells us that maybe their economic situation is still a little bit challenged. And they also might be trying to support their corn prices for their producers, because I think that's one of the concerns that we heard going forward, is they're really trying to increase their domestic production of corn.
I think they had gotten some negative input from their ethanol producers in China on the DDGs that they'd imported in the past, and that was where kind of the beginnings of that were, Bill, if I read things right.
I think I did hear a shadow in that neighborhood. I just didn't commit it to memory on the spot. Yep.
And just to add on that point, one thing we're hearing is, you know, China is refiring up some of their ethanol plants, and I think they want to improve their market for their own byproducts as well. And if you want to be negative corn and bean, you know, corn values going forward, and think that they could make a move into new lows, it would probably be the loss of that DDG market. And we know that they've also restricted their sorghum market. Those imports that were racing out of the U.S. Earlier in the marketing year now have been slowed. And, you know, if that backs up into the U.S., then that's only going to add to our already slow export program in grains.
Todd, can I ask a question?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, I just have a question. You gentlemen talk to more producers than I do, I suppose, on a daily basis. What I know, and I will say this with the caveat that it's October 29th, okay, but where do you think your producers are level of concern here just with the dry weather in the Midwest? If you look at the drought monitors come out every Thursday, we got some dry areas that are building. I guess I would just poll each of you to see what is the level of concern from the producer as far as the dry weather just in the Midwest.
I think there's, I guess I'd call it moderate concern right now. People I talk to, there's definitely a concern, mainly on being able to get out there and maybe get some anhydrous on here pretty soon and that type of thing, get the, you know, field work finished. The soil situation isn't ideal for that. I don't think there's a long-term concern at this point, but they're certainly aware of it.
It doesn't seem like a big concern in our customer base at this point, but I've heard the same things, you know, doing some fall field work, and it is awfully dry out there, but I don't know that it's a concern yet.
It's definitely getting some press in our neighborhood and points east and north of us. I think it's a talking point, but it's probably too soon to be a real issue, but it will be monitored closely, especially when we get to early spring.
I will just add one thing, the wheat and getting the wheat up, it certainly did have some effect in that from that standpoint.
I'm definitely not trying to create a news story here, Todd. I was just curious. In some instances, I know some weather watchers are talking about maybe some transition from El Nino to La Nina pretty quickly. And I think that has a trend to be, you know, on the drier side here, you know, for the Corn Belt here. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I'm just curious if that was on any producer's radar here as we move into, you know, the winter is going to go pretty quickly, obviously, and then we start talking about corn planting here in not too many months, and, you know, what that could potentially mean here as we move into the next growing season. So,
during the closing market report, we keep pretty close track of that with the meteorologists that we talk to, and I think all of them are the same mind. They have all looked back at the really strong El Nino years. to see if there's any correlation in the following summer. Once in a while there is, but there's not much of a correlation. And in general, most of the climatologists and the meteorologists will say what happens in the previous fall has little impact on the springtime because the rains generally will come in. So we'll see. But it does happen, so it is an item to watch. I think, Aaron, why don't we get a final word from you, and we'll begin to wrap up our program.
Okay, I think short term here, I think we continue to grind sideways, keep an eye on some of those demand numbers we continue to see, especially on the corn export side. We have a lot of room for improvement here. It won't be too long here until we're talking about another crop report on November 10th, where the USDA will update production. Not expecting a lot of change there, but obviously could add some volatility to the market. But short term here, I think we continue to grind sideways.
Bill Gentry?
I think we've touched on most important stuff, basis levels, and once the bender closes, what will open back up. We think it's going to take quite a bit more price than what we're seeing right this minute.
Scott Harms.
We would recommend being patient. Looks like we're going nowhere real fast, but something is going to come up that will be unexpected. It could create some selling opportunities in the meantime. Look out to the May time period when, if you're looking at a re-ownership strategy. I think the markets may stay somewhat benign through the winter, but maybe a late winter, early spring recovery might be in the cards.
Dan, Bill Mayer.
Just a couple of things on crop insurance. Looks like we're going to end up about 383 and 891. Of course, that's not official yet until we get through the end of the month. That means that on 85% coverage on corn, you'd have to have about an 8% reduction from your APH to have a claim there, and about a 6% on soybeans. So that looks like that's kind of where we're at. We did withstand a pretty strong attack on the crop insurance this week with the budget bill and some language that was added to that. And I think that we probably have withstood that, but look for future attacks on the crop insurance programs as we go down the road.
Yes, the budget deal did slash the crop insurance by $3 billion over 10 years, and that's actually put into place at this point. However, there are promises, Bill, as you mentioned, that Mike Conaway out of Texas and Pat Roberts from Kansas have been able to garner as it relates to the omnibus spending bill for FY16. So we're not out of the woods on crop insurance for that one yet, but we'll be watching and we'll be making sure that we keep folks up to date at willag.org. Thanks to all of you for being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks. Thanks, Todd.
Take care.
The panelists on this week's edition of Commodity Week include Aaron Curtis of Midco, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodity, Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services, and Bill Merritt, Strategic Farm Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org, and don't forget you can order your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference there. Find all the details as well on farmassetsconference.com, or just dial in now at 800-898-1066. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.